Hey, new Met fans, and welcome to another episode of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel the Tower, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. I'm John Arezzi, and joining me as we begin to wind down this season with just a few more shows this month, let's welcome the former manager of the New York Mets, who finished his duties back in the dugout from Mets Fantasy Camp, Terry Collins. Terry, welcome back from Fantasy Camp.
It's great to be back, John. It's had a great week, a lot of fun, met a lot of cool people, and certainly enjoyed watching them play. But it's good to be back on the show because we got a good show today.
Oh, it's an amazing show, actually, Terry. I mean, you today, we're going to talk a little hot stove stuff in the beginning of the show, but you got a guest for us today that people will remember for a long time on one of these closing episodes. Let us know who you got today.
Yeah, I've been trying to get a hold of him. I have a relationship with this guy from a long time ago. His brother played for me years ago in the minor leagues, and and the guy's name is Daryl Strawberry. The Mets fans, probably all baseball fans, know who he is. And I've had a great relationship with Daryl through the years. And I thought, you know what, we're getting towards the end, and I want to have him on. So I gave him a shout, and he said, I'd love to be on your show. And it just tells you, you know, what a cool person he is, because he has some kind of a busy schedule these days with his, you know, his missionaries that he does now and through his church. And he's traveling all over the place. So to take time to be on the show is very cool.
Yeah, it's amazing that we're able to get him, or you were able to get him. We look forward to that coming up on Talking with TC in just a few minutes here. Before we get to Daryl Strawberry, let's talk about what's going on in the hot stove, as they call it now, the off season. Terry, Steve Cohen has the first meeting with Scott Boras and the number one free agent on the market, Juan Soto, this week in Los Angeles. I'm sure David Stearns will be joining him out west for the meeting. The Yankees also have a meeting scheduled with Boras and Soto, and that's next week. And while nothing's guaranteed here, Met fans are fantasizing about what could be. Give us your assessment on Juan Soto and what signing him could mean to the New York Mets franchise.
Well, first of all, he's a generational player. He's, especially at his age, you're talking about a 26-year-old player who, he hasn't even probably reached the prime of his career yet, who's on the free agent market. So he's going to command huge money, but he's also going to command a long time. His contract is going to be a number of years. So whoever signs this guy is going to have a great player for a long period of time. And those are the kind of guys you build around. You know, you have that one guy in the middle, and you try to fill in around him a little bit to give him help and protect him a little bit. So it's going to be great. I don't know Juan myself. I just saw him play. I was pretty much done when he first got to the big leagues as a young player. But two of my coaches have coached Juan, and they speak very, very highly of him, what a class act he is. So I'm sure it's going to be quite an experience, but My relationship with Steve Cohen, he does a pretty good job of persuading you.
I'm sure he does, and we look forward to seeing what's going to happen with Juan Soto. It's all anyone can talk about right now, so we'll wait and see, because from what we understand, it's not going to be a lot of teams competing for him. And it really, from what the predictions are, it's Mets, Yankees, and maybe Giants may step in, maybe Dodgers. But Juan had a taste of New York. He got to the World Series with the Yankees this year. He seems to love the city. So we'll see where this goes as we head deeper into the free agent season as these in-person meetings start to happen. And Terry, with 13 free agents this season, half of the Mets' 2024 roster, they're now free to sign with anyone. You've watched the team all season, falling just a couple of games short of being in that World Series. Give me a few names of the players that you really would like to see the Mets bring back in 2025.
Well, it's going to start around the first baseman. You know, this guy drafted, developed, got to the big leagues with the New York Mets. He's become a star in New York. He's shown everybody he can play, he can handle what New York brings. tremendous outside the baseline, outside the stadium. You know, he's a huge. He does a lot with Tunnel of Towers. He donates a lot of his time and his money to different charities. He loves New York City, and I think it's ultimately important to go to Pete Alonso, and I mean now, and say, we want you back. All right, let's try to negotiate something that's going to work for us. You're talking about Pete's got Scott Boras, and you know, Scott's in the best in the game at getting what his clients deserve, and he does an amazing job of getting it. But I think you got to start there. And you can't, and again, you, next thing you got to do is you got to look at that starting pitching that came on and basically carry this team the last 6 weeks of the season. The job that Manaea, Severino, Quintana, you know, did, you know, David Peterson, obviously he's going to be back, but that free agent pitching, you know, you got to bring some of those guys back, because we saw this year, you can't just go in the spring training. So here's our five starters. You know, John, it's going to take 7 or 8 or 9 of those guys. So you better sign some free agents plus guys that showed you they can pitch in New York, they can pitch at Citi Field, and they've got one of the things this team prided themselves in is their continuity as a unit. They love each other. They had more fun with being around each other. So why not resume that? Why not make it easy in spring training to hit the ground running with guys who know each other? So I just think it's important to try to sign, you know, some of those free agent pitchers. And, you know, from there, if, you know, and I know it's all, I understand the money's big. It's not my money. I get it. But I just know it's important to bring some guys who have a familiarity with the organization, the city, the fan base, to start there. So I would like to see them bring not only Pete, but some of that pitching staff back.
Yeah, that continuity of bringing some of these guys back. And of course, many have expressed interest in staying with New York and coming back, and we'll wait to see what happens. But there is a very busy offseason ahead for the New York Mets, and to see who they'll bring back and what additions they can make to really enhance a team that almost made the World Series. And Terry, you know, right now it's off season. You spent many years in the dugout managing Angels, the Astros, and of course the Mets. Give us a little insight on what a big league manager does during the off season and how involved you are during those months with the front office and communication with the players. Is there really ever an off season for a big league skipper?
Not anymore. You know, it's pretty encompassing now. You know, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of your time is taken up with promoting the ball club. You know, I didn't live in New York when I managed there, only just during the season, but I spent many days going back to do banquets and charity obligations that we had. You know, it's a little different. Other places, some of the other places I was, the general manager would call and talk about possible player moves. I used to go watch the instructional league teams that started, that were still going on when the season ended, go to the Arizona Fall League, watch some of that, go to winter ball, watch some of your young players. So I had a better idea of what they could and couldn't do. So, you know, you stay really, really busy. And then, you know, once the Super Bowl's over, you know, it's the first part of February and your players start coming into town here. And so you're always just going out to the field to talk with them, even though you're really not allowed to be on the field with them, working them out. You can go talk to them in the clubhouses or even on the side. So, you know, you're really busy. That the 4 months in the off season goes by very fast.
All right, Terry, thank you for that. And it is Veterans Day as we tape this today. And for this Veterans Day, Tunnel of Towers announced it's providing 40 mortgage-free homes in celebration of Veterans Day. Of those, 37 are for Gold Star families and 3 are for families of fallen first responders who have also served our country. These homes are in 22 different states. It's a demonstration of TTT's continuing commitment to America's greatest heroes. The foundation is also showing its support for veterans facing hardships. Over the past 5 weeks, Tunnel of Towers has broken ground on 4 new veterans villages. They're located in Buffalo, Denver, Detroit, and Charleston. These facilities will provide permanent housing and comprehensive support and services for vets who need stable homes. This is part of T2T's mission to eradicate veteran homelessness. And Terry, of course, we've talked about them each and every week here. And I just got an invitation for a groundbreaking for four homes for three vets here in the Tennessee, Middle Tennessee area. So they're out there. And holidays like Veterans Day, they only enhance what they do. And they're so special to be associated with.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, and I mean, we talked about it on a weekly basis. Some, you know, and I said this, and I, you know, I just spent some time at the fantasy camp, and these guys, of course, are, you know, huge fans and huge believer, in baseball and stuff. And part of the, you know, I've done a couple of PSAs for Tunnel of Towers, and they are all talking about it. And I brought up the same comments that I said, you know, to other people. There, you know, there's a time when you come upon an organization that genuinely should be helped out financially to keep running so that we have a better society in our United States. And that's Tunnel to Towers for that $11 a month, you know, what it does to provide homes and care for the people who fight their life, you know, their entire lives, give their lives to make our country better is just a little token of a thank you to them. And I think it should be the American people should take more of a responsibility and show that support to our troops and our first responders, because it's an amazing life that they lead. I don't know a lot of people who could do it. And so we need to thank them a little bit. And I know Tunnel to Towers is the perfect foundation to do that.
Yep. Well, absolutely, Terry. And we will be back with our special Talking with TC with Daryl Strawberry right after this word from Tunnel to Towers.
John was the most incredible person I'd ever met. He was present as a Marine and present as a dad, as a husband. When I was picking up my daughter from daycare, my friend that I would carpool with mentioned that there was an aircraft that went down. In an instant, you know, your life does change. I got this call from Tunnel to Towers, and she said, "We're going to take care of your mortgage." I'm so grateful for that.
Go to t2t.org. It only takes $11 a month to make a positive impact.
Today on Talking with TC, our special guest is one of the all-time greats in Mets history and baseball history as well. He played for the New York Mets from 1983 to 1990. He also played for the Los Angeles Dodgers, San Francisco Giants, and finished his playing career with the New York Yankees. He was selected eight consecutive years for the All-Star Game, starting in right field in five consecutive years. He was on three World Championship teams, once with the Mets and twice with the Yankees. He was the National League Rookie of the Year in 1983. He holds the all-time record for home runs with the New York Mets with 252. He is a Mets Hall of Famer and earlier this year had his number 18 retired at Citi Field. It's an honor to welcome to Talking with TC, Daryl Strawberry. Daryl, welcome to Talking with TC.
Well, thank you for having me. It's good to see TC, man. It's been a long time, brother.
Well, I appreciate you taking your time out, Daryl. I know you got a ton of things going on, and so it's great to have you on the show. And I live in Florida, and I'm down at this fantasy camp, and so all of these campers have been asking me, and they said, you know, hey, when are you going to have Daryl Strawberry on the show? I said, you know what, guys, I don't want to break the news to you too early, but he's coming on this week. And so they're all excited. Of course, I tried to call the other night with Doc and I were having dinner together. And so it certainly is a pleasure to have you on. So thanks for coming on.
Well, you're one of the best, TC. You know, we love you, man. And, you know, when you reach out, we respond. You know, you're part of the Mets family and everything, and a big part of, you know, with the history around there and you being the manager there and everything. It was very special to me to watch you manage those ball clubs.
Well, thanks. So Straw, this past summer, you had your number retired. Tell the fans, you know, what did it mean to you when you got that phone call from, I'm sure Steve Cohen probably called you and gave you the information. How'd you feel about that?
I was just kind of quiet, you know, and kind of disbelief, you know, that this is really taking place. You know, I heard about it, that it may take place at some point, sometime. But to finally get there and get that call from Steve and realize that, you know, he is a fan of the organization. He is a fan of the team. He's a fan of the history of the team. And that's what makes it special. He's not just the owner, you know. He kind of reminds me of the boss, George. You know, he takes pride and wearing his New York Mets shirt and his New York Mets hat, you know. And I think people don't understand that when you have an owner like that, that looks at the history of the organization, important. You know, when you have an organization, and especially playing in New York City, and you got to compete against the Yankees, you definitely have to put your history of what has happened there, all the great players that have been through there. We've had a lot of great players that come through that organization. We had a lot of great coaches and managers that come through. Sitting here talking to one of them, you know, you are one of those guys, you know, that brought, that elevated that organization. Give credit where credit need to be due. And I think all respect, that's what Steve is doing with the organization. He's giving a lot of credit to the people that made some special moments for this organization.
You know, Darryl, those times when you first got to the big leagues, I mean, the Mets were obviously on the rise. So tell me, go back and tell me about those early years with all of you young guys. I mean, gosh, you guys were young, man, when you got to the big leagues. And, you know, and all of a sudden to rise into that stardom at an early age, how hard was it in New York City to do that?
It was hard to do. I think the most important thing that happened for us was having great coaches. I think Bobby Valentine, Buddy Harrelson, Frank Howard. I'm talking about guys that understood baseball. Jim Fry, Bill Robinson, Davey Johnson. I had all those guys along the line to guide us and help us develop. Mel Stoudemire, you know, he helped the pitching staff. There's just so many great coaches that we had coming up that helped us. You know, of course, we were young and playing in the big city, but then we had the veteran players blend in. We had Keith Carter, Ray Knight, and Mookie Wilson. With all those guys, with all the younger guys coming along, they helped orchestrate a great chemistry, you know, for us. I think that was the most important thing. People talk about TC chemistry is not important. Chemistry is important when you're playing baseball and you have a team. You have to have a team that's in it all together. Important thing, coming up, we had so many young players like myself, Doc and Lenny and, you know, Elster and just Kevin Mitchell. You just go along and along that organization and you think about our minor league system. Our minor league system was stacked with players. And we had tons of players that could have came up and played in the big leagues, but it was so many guys in front of them that they couldn't play. So you started trading off of some and they would end up playing in the big leagues somewhere else. So I think the organization was great because of Frank Cashin. He did a phenomenal job developing, you know, that farm system and keeping that farm system developed so he can use those players. You know, Greg Jeffries, Max came up, you know, they were great players. I don't care what anybody would say about them. They were great players for us. They did a lot of great things, and they helped us get in the winning circle each year.
You know, Darryl, you bring up some of the coaches, and obviously, you know, the fans, because it's the new fans, they can't relate to some of those coaches. What one coach do you think made the biggest impact in your career, whether it was in the minor leagues coming up or the big leagues when you finally got here?
I just think it was a variety of the coaches in the minor league, like Chuck Hiller when I started off in rookie ball. Never want to forget him, where he made it comfortable for me coming in a big number one draft pick. That's the start of your career. You know, people look at your career, but they don't look at the start of people. Gene Doucette, who was my A-ball coach, and he was my double-A coach. You know, had it not been for guys like Gene Doucette, I probably would have never excelled because he was there to encourage me, to keep me focused, even when I was having hard times going through the minor leagues and everything. Because everybody don't realize how difficult it is, you know, coming through the minor leagues and having to play and trying to achieve and trying to establish yourself to get to the big league. So these guys really help you get to that next level. I don't think they get a lot of credit, TC. More, everybody focus on all the coaches in the big leagues. Yeah, I had great coaches in the big leagues, but had it not been for Chuck Hiller and Davey Johnson was my manager in AAA, and he would eventually be my manager in the big leagues. Had it not been for those guys and those relationships, those are personal relationships I took. I mean, and they were like father figures to me, and I'm very thankful for them. You know, and that's why when my number was retired, I honored them because they are a big part of who I became as a ball player. And I think people don't recognize those guys just because they don't get to the big leagues and be coaching at the big league level.
You know, Darryl, people don't realize, I mean, you got drafted out of high school. And all of a sudden, here you are. And I mean, you've always been a good player, I'm sure. You were the star in your area. And we're, by the way, I know there are a lot of good players from that area you were in. But, you know, what kind of pressure, Darryl, did you put on yourself as a number one pick, you know, 18 years old or 17 year, whatever you were when you got drafted, what kind of pressure did you put on yourself, or did you feel, you know, when you first walked into that camp, because you knew when you knew that that first day you walked to wherever you had to go to start your season, all eyes were on you. How did that affect your development?
I think it just kind of disturbs you a little bit inside, because you're just a kid. And you just want to play baseball. You've always been playing baseball. And I had to really tell myself to, you know, stay and stick with what baseball is all about. Baseball doesn't change. It's the same game since I've been playing since I was little league. So I had to make that adjustment. But like I said before, it was the coaches that helped me through that process. Gene Doucette was a big help for me through that process in A-ball, because I came that close to quitting after that A-ball season. And he walked me through that A-ball season, because I had to deal with a lot of negative from fans and people saying things. And he was just like, don't look up there. Don't be a part of none of that. And he helped me through that. He helped me learn that this is going to be real. It's going to be a real challenge you're going to have to go through. And adversity is going to be, and you deal with it. And so that was the part that I had to learn more than anything, TC, because I think if you don't learn that, you can respond in either a negative way or a positive way. I mean, I think the positive side of me was, okay, if you're going to say negative things, then I'm going to show you with my talent. He says, let your talent shine. And that's what I learned how to do. I learned how to let my talent shine. And once I got through that process of going through the lower levels of minor leagues and getting to AAA, I started to get more mature about things. And when you get to the big leagues, you need the help once you get to the big leagues. I think a lot of people don't realize how much pressure it is to play at the big leagues levels. And you need everybody around you to help you to be a big part of you. And, you know, and I experienced that with, like I said, great coaches. Bobby Valentine, my first year, you know, was great for me. You know, he always inspired me. And he was the one that started the high five when I was hitting home runs and stuff like that. So it's just those little things like that that make you in yourself as a player. And once I got to that belief system through Jim Frey, had it not been for Jim Frey getting in my face, TC, I was supposed to be at the ballpark at 1 o'clock. I didn't show up till 3 o'clock. And he got in my face and he said, I'm never going to wait for you again. If you want to be a great Major League Baseball player, you'll be at this ballpark early every day. And from that day forward, I always was at the ballpark early every day. It's not about working on things that you're good at. It's about working on things that you're not good at. And he taught me that. And that excelled me into a whole different direction of playing.
Wow. You know, Darryl, I went to the dinner the night before you had your number retired, and you gave great tributes to Eric Davis. What kind of an impact? Because, you know, I'm telling you, he was a good player also. So what kind of, you know, where did Eric Davis fit into all of this development stuff?
Best friend. Best friend growing up, best friend playing ball together when it came to baseball. And we started a group of all of us when we were young. And go to Harvard Park every year, January 1st, to start training and getting ready for the season. And me and Eric was that guy. We played on Connie Mack ball team together. Eric was playing shortstop. He was our leadoff batter. I batted third. Chris Brown was our number fourth hitter playing third base. So we were kind of stacked in the middle of all of that coming out of South Central LA together. But our brotherhood, me and Eric Davis, our brotherhood was just a bond that you can't intertwine in, and you can't take away, no matter what, you know, what we've done in life and what we've been through, because we come from that place where we believed in each other, we cared for each other, and we never competed against each other. I think that's what people fail to realize about athletes. Is sometimes a lot of athletes are competing against each other. Me and Ed grew up together and played on the same team. We were not in competitions. We were all about killing the other team. That was the number one thing for us. So Eric Davis was one of the Central LA, out of Compton, just like I was. We saw all these other great players that came out. We don't take anything away from a Hall of Famer, Ozzie Smith, Eddie. But I just believe me and Eric Davis was those two kind of players that was just a different type. You know, we just didn't do one thing. I think we did everything, you know, far as playing the ball game. And a lot of people recognize that for us, that you can run, hit, throw, and, you know, they can hit for power. They can do it all. Steal bases, you know, they just did everything. And Eric Davis was that guy too.
You know, you brought up a name, a guy who played for me. God, I don't know if I wouldn't say towards the end of his career, but he was trying to make a comeback, was Chris Brown. He was some kind of a talented player, man. you know, for a big man, he could run too. I saw him run down Deion Sanders one time in a rundown. So, yeah, Chris Brown was a good player, boy.
Chris Brown was, he was our third baseman in my high school team. So we played at Crenshaw High together. He was our third baseman when I was a junior. And he just dominated that senior year. I mean, scouts shook their head. Every time he came up to bat, he would hit the ball so far, scouts couldn't believe how far he could hit the baseball in high school. And he also was a great basketball player for Crenshaw High School basketball team. He won the city championship in 1979. They killed, I can't remember, I think they beat John Mayer or something like that. But he's just one of the phenomenal athletes that come out of Crenshaw High. Another guy like Ellis Valentine, Wendell Tyler, Marcus Johnson, myself, Chris Brown, all of us as those elite players that came out of Crenshaw High.
Yeah, those are great. So, you know, Daryl, we got a situation here, I think, you know, in New York. You know, you're kind of, Pete Alonso is kind of going through a similar where you were, you know, the star of the team, you know, a huge piece of the puzzle. You know, now all of a sudden he's faced with free agency, and I know he wants to probably stay a Met. You know, what advice would you give Pete Alonso heading into this free agency?
I think the most important thing is knowing where you're supposed to be. And if New York is the place where you're supposed to be, then you stay there. If it's somewhere else that you're supposed to be, then that's what you do. You take the opportunity and make a decision that's best for you and your family. And hopefully he makes the right decision. I think that's the most important thing for Pete, is to make the right decision for his career, what his career is going to be like. And at the end of the day, make sure financially that you are taken care, you know, for the rest of your life with your family. You only get one shot at this.
So, you know, so Daryl, one of the things I've seen here in recent times with the advent of all the analytics stuff, you know, we have forgotten sometimes, in my opinion, the big league players have forgotten about what kind of an impact the veteran player can make. And I've been trying to, you know, talk people in, you know, there's no reason why Daryl Strawberry and, you know, David Wright and those guys aren't in camp someplace, just doing nothing more than relaying, you know, stuff that you learned to help the new generation player get better. Do you find that as something that you would, if you were a young player today, you would cherish?
Of course I would cherish it. I mean, these are guys that had history, had great success. They've been in the winning circle. Have we completed it all the time? No, but we've been there. And, you know, it's hard to get there, TC. You know that as a manager just as well as a player. It's not that easy to get there. Just because you have one blur season and you think you have arrived and you got there, that doesn't mean you won't get there next year. I mean, they had a great season this year, you know, for the Mets. You know, it doesn't guarantee you're going to get to the National League Championship Series again. That's hard to do. That's not an easy thing to do. And I think, you know, that veteran players, we're not here to try to tell you how to play, but we're here to tell you how to get through this long season. It's a long, hard season, especially playing in New York. The pressure and expectations is not like that anywhere else. You can go a lot of places, and it could be a lot easier to play and everything for you. But when you play in a big city and you have to compete with the Yankees in town too, the expectations are going to be big. And so younger players, don't ever think guys are trying to tell you how to do this. We know you have talent. We want you to do it. But I think with the analytics, I don't have a problem with that, whatever it is. I didn't play under that. I played fundamental baseball. I know how that works. I know I never went up there swinging up to try to hit the ball to the ballpark, TC. I know I just hit the baseball hard and it takes care of itself. Okay, they're in a different time. We get it. But at the same time, you're going to have to stick to what got you there. How did you get there to the big leagues? How did you get there playing baseball? How did you grow up playing baseball? And that's what counts. Fundamentals of baseball counts in games when you got to play in October. And if you're not fundamentally sound, it just shows. It's going to show up. And look what happened to the Yankees. Fundamentally not sound, it showed up. That's what's going to show up when you really need to understand what fundamentals are, making the plays, not giving the extra outs. And I think a lot of times the players today don't realize that, and that could cost you in a big series.
You know, hey, Daryl, obviously there's a few guys who played on both sides of the city in New York. Did you find one place tougher to play than the other?
Not really. I mean, I think it's a lot easier to play in New York when you've already played there and experienced New York, because the fans are just different fans. It's a different fan. And each fan base love their team. The Yankee fans, the Mets fans, they love their team. And they there's a rivalry between each other in the city, who rules the city. And no one rules it if you don't win. You know, that's the whole thing about it.
That's for sure. Yeah. It does solve a lot of problems, doesn't it, that winning?
It solves all the problems of who wins. But I enjoy playing in a place like that, because you know what I learned, TC? They're going to stand on their feet when you do well. And when you don't do well, they're going to let you know. I don't know how much they do that today with the players, because the players are a little bit more sensitive when it comes to fans getting at them. But they have great knowledge of the game and understanding of the game, and their passion for it is their team. And that's what I love about the city of New York. You know, it's the greatest place to play, regardless of who won this year. There's no place when you're winning and those fans are standing up on their feet cheering for you. That place gets louder than any place I've ever been in. And I've been in some places where they were loud before, but I've never been in places as loud as they have when I played in New York City.
Yeah. Darryl, were you shocked that you guys didn't win another championship
in New York? I was shocked.
With the teams you had?
I was totally shocked. I was disappointed and shocked, because we had great teams every year. And our goal coming out of spring training was winning. It wasn't can we win. See, one thing people don't understand about those years, TC, is there was no wild card. So you had to win the division. You had to conquer. Right. You had to conquer over some teams that were going to be great in your division. We had to conquer the Cubs. We had to conquer the Cardinals. We had to battle the Pirates later on in my career. We had to battle. We didn't have much to battle with the Braves, because we used to kill them back in. Later and started dominating. But I was shocked that we just couldn't get through, especially that 88 season. The 86 team had more guts than the 88 team. The 88 team had more talent than the 86 team. A very talented young group of guys, players, that was coming through. And we developed well. I can say that. Give credit to, you know, the front office, because they developed well through the system. And they knew how to keep a team together going forward to win. Steve, when you win 95 games a year, you're supposed to win. You know, and if you – that's what it was for us. We were winning 90-plus games a year. But you had to win the division to get in. If we had a wild card, we would have been in every year. Now we would have had more chances to get in further and deeper into the playoffs, but we didn't. So we lost in 88 against the Dodgers, and it's just like the Dodgers this year beat the Mets this year. I was hoping he would beat that Dodger team, but that Dodger team just is more talented than the Mets are right now, and the Mets are improving. I like the direction they're going in. I like what the front office is doing. I like moving in a direction where they see young players as important, and I think that's going to help them in the long run. Like the Braves are like that, the youth, they extend themselves to the youth to develop, take your falls right now and build it for the next couple of years. You know, by the time they're 25, they'll all be ready to win. So that's a good thing to see coming from now.
Yeah. So Darryl, all the great players you played with and against, tell me, if you started out a week and you're looking down the, you know, who you got this week, you got the Braves, you got the Reds. Was there one pitcher that you said, I can't wait to face him? Or one pitcher that you said, ooh, I hate facing that guy?
Well, I always hate facing Nolan Ryan, you know, because Nolan was
Did you? You
know?
Did you?
Oh, yeah. You know, he didn't have that success for just nothing. He had it because he was a different breed of pitcher. You know, he was like Tom Seaver, Bob Gibson type of guy that stare you down, look you down, and you like get in the box and, you know, he throw one under your chin like just to let you know, you know, I control the mound, I control the plate. There was not a lot of other pitchers like that. All the rest of them used to think they can get me out. Nolan knew he could get me out. That's a big difference, you know.
Yeah.
and thinking, can I get him out? But Nolan, I mean, I got Nolan a couple times too, but he just knew most of the time, he knew he can get me out. And that was just one of those things. And I realized that, and I had nothing but respect for him. You know, most of the other guys I faced, I was like, okay, come on, bring it, you know, because I got the. It's all about TC. It's all about pitchers making mistakes. That's really what it is. They're going to make it. It's just that, can I capitalize on a mistake? And a lot of times I did.
Well, yeah, I sure did. I remember going in there when I first got to the big leagues with the Pirates. I remember going to New York and you know, we didn't have, you know, we had scouting reports, but it wasn't like it is today where the numbers were random. And I just remember one time Jim Leland standing up in front of the guy, and I mean, in front of the team, just saying, hey, look, you know, we get the lead. We can't let Strawberry beat us. So, and you know, so I was actually the bullpen coach on those teams, and we were getting later in the game, and you know, and those guys, they started getting itchy because they knew they were going to have to face you. And of course, Jim, or just before the game, said, "Hey, you can't let this guy beat you." And they're going, "Oh man,
Well, Jim Leland was a great manager. You know, I have nothing but high respects for him. You know, manage the Pirates and handle them, and where he brought the Pittsburgh organization to, he brought them to a winning place. And, you know, I have utmost respect for Jim, you know, always did. And, you know, he could chuck on some cigarettes over there and his nerves.
He sure could. Yeah.
But he was a good man.
He was great. Well, Daryl, I know John's got some questions for you. He's, you know, he's a lifelong Mets fan, and he's probably watched you more than you can possibly imagine how many games he watched you play. So I know he's got some good questions for you. So, John, go ahead.
All right. Thanks, Terry. Yeah, Daryl, I've watched you since day one. I mean, you know, I go back and Mets season ticket holder in New York for many years and got a chance to experience some incredible memories with you at the plate. I want to talk about the 86 team, which will never be forgotten, obviously. To this day, that team is revered by the fans who were fortunate enough, like me, 38 years ago, to be able to be there at Shea Stadium to see that magical season. And to those who are younger and have to experience it through videos, to this day, there are autograph shows, there are reunions with the 86 group of players. Talk to us about that 86 team and how special it is when you all get a chance to get together again.
It's very special. It's a very unique group of guys, all type of personalities, which made us great, which made us believe in each other, which made us have each other back. And I think that was the most important thing about a team, because we had lost in 85 to the Cardinals, and most people don't realize we won 98 games that year and still lost to the Cardinals. And that last game in St. Louis, our locker room was quiet. And so I knew it was a group of guys that were coming back next year, and we all knew that too. And we came to spring training that next year, and the first meeting, Davey Johnson said, but he said, we're going to win it all. We're going to dominate. And we just thought to ourselves, okay, this is our year. This is our year to do that. And we got off to a slow start, and the media was talking about, yeah, they're going to dominate. But once we got rolling, it was over. We did exactly what Davey predicted us to do. And it was because of the team. It was because of the chemistry. It was because of the having each other back. You know, and I think a lot of times people don't realize how important that is. When you go on through a long season, you're gonna have some highs, you're gonna have some lows. But having each other back means everybody's got to be on board. Everybody's got to pick each other up. And that's what it was. We didn't have to look to one player. This guy, yeah, Keith was great. Carter was great. I was, Mookie, Kevin, you know, I mean, Ray Knight. But everybody picked each other up. You know, we had Tuffle coming off the bench. We just had different chemistry. Lenny, you know, we just had so many different guys that plugged in. And that's what's important playing in a place like that. And I think that's why that team is so special. That's the only team I've played on had guts to do about anything and wasn't worried about what people thought about us. If we was going to fight, it was going to be all of us. We're going to be in it. If we was out and you mess with us and you was in the bar and you mess with our teammates, we was on you. I mean, we just had each other back. I mean, was it going to be some headlines? Yes, it was a lot of headlines about us. But the thing about it was everybody has such great respect for each other on that ball club. that we came to the ballpark together. And when we stepped between the lines, I don't care if we had animosity, because we did. Every team has some animosity. You know that, TC.
Yes.
But, you know, that's part of it. But you don't let that interfere with what you do when you step on the field. And that's what was special about the 86 Mets. We didn't let anything interfere with what we was doing on the field. We was going to completely dominate. We knew the ball game. We didn't care. Teams would jump out 5-0 on us over there, and they'd be high-fiving. It'd be like the second, third inning. We sit over there thinking to ourselves, these guys just don't know. We're coming back and winning this ball game. You know, that, they had no clue, and we would come back and win it because that's just the way we were. We just knew how to do that.
Yeah, it was such a magical team, magical time for the franchise, and the team will never be forgotten. Watching you over the course of your career, you've hit some majestic home runs, some historic home runs. I remember opening day when you in Montreal and you hit two home runs, but one of them hit actually the top of the stadium. I remember the 86 World Series home run in Game 7. I remember a walk-off you hit against Johnny Franco where the Reds were leading, and then you came in, and I was at that game. I was sitting right behind the batter's circle, and I saw that ball just hit that scoreboard, and it was like never seen anything quite like it. And then there was the St. Louis home run as well, which hit the clock. So which one out of all these home runs, is there anyone that stands out in your memory as like, that's my favorite home run?
Yeah, the two in the National League Championship Series. One against Nolan. He was throwing a one that shut out. Him and Doc locked up in the game, and Nolan was dealing. And I hit a ball down the right field line to State Fair to tie that game, and we go on to win that game. And the one against Knepper, you know, was up 4-1, and I hit a 3-run homer, and we tied that game, and we go on to win that game. If we don't win those games, we go home. So, you know, because Scott was dominating us in that series. But, you know, all the other home runs are regular season home runs. Those are great, you know, those are great home runs and things like that. But nothing's bigger than postseason home runs. When you get into postseason, you hit big home runs in crucial situations. Because that, you know, postseason window of time, TC know that, he'll tell you that. That's just a short window. You know, you ain't going to have, it ain't going to be, I got to get them the next day, every day. You know, it's a short window. You know, those games are so critical for you and your team. And to be able to tie those games up, and then we can go on to win those games. That's how we end up winning that series, you know. Because if I don't hit those home runs, we going home because Nolan's dealing. Nobody's touching him, and you know I tie the game, and then he comes out of the game, and he comes out of the game because Doc's pitching, and it's a 1-1 game, and we have a chance still to win the ball game. And the Knepper game, you know, I just tied that up with a big 3-run homer. And Lenny would hit a home run in the 10th, I believe it was, got us the victory in that game. So that's just the way baseball is. And I'm all about not the individual stat. I'm all about what makes your team more successful when you clutch home runs. And those situations were the clutch situations that I believe made our team successful going to be able to win that year.
Totally. It was just great watching all of that. And that roller coaster series in 86 against the Astros, there was nothing like it, especially that 16-inning game to finish it off. I want to take you back to June 1st, the day the Mets retired your number 18 forever. It was your day, and then you, of course, celebrated that. But you also thanked so many people who were part of your journey. And it was also a time where the 2024 Mets were not in a very good place. I mean, it was – they were kind of hitting rock bottom. They had started 0-5. They won 11 games under 500 right around that time. But you made it a point at the end of your speech, and we're going to play a short little clip from that. Things were not good in Queens for the organization. The Mets were losing, and they were in a good place. But you delivered a very inspirational message to the fans, the players, the organization, which I'll play for you now, and I'll get your thoughts on that on the other side.
But most of all, to you fans and to the players of the day, embrace this. It goes fast. These are the greatest fans you will ever play in front of. They They will stand on their feet for you and cheer you on. They will let you know when you suck. Don't worry about it, guys. It's part of it. But push through, because you guys have it. You have the talent. Believe in each other. Care for each other. Trick each other out. And I just want to say to Steve and Alex, for this organization, David Stern, the best is yet to come for you guys. Just know that. It's a process, but the best will come. Because you guys have the right heart for it. To make these fans great again. Because they are faithful. And I experienced it more than you could ever imagine. And I'm forever grateful for this day. I celebrate you guys. I will never forget you guys. You guys will always be in my thoughts and my prayers. And I love you guys, and God bless you guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Cold chills on that one.
It's just when you play in front of for eight seasons, it's no other feeling. It's the greatest feeling. To be able to play in front of people that care, that have passion, and that support you, that's going to cheer you on. But also what I love about them, they're going to let you know when you're not playing well. You know, and that's not a bad thing. You know, for me, that was great. Mm-hmm. You know, I thrived in that. I thrived in that atmosphere of not when they got on me and let me know that I wasn't playing well. And they were right. You need to pick it up. And it makes you a better ball player. And I just think the moment in time of seeing this team and seeing what Steve and his wife has done and David and realizing that I was in spring training with them and saw Mindy and saw what they had, the coaching staff, and saw the talent that they had there. You know, they have a tremendous amount of young talent coming through their farm system. And it's just about other, because I experienced that myself, you know, with all of us coming through the farm system, the guys that came behind me. But I saw the guys that were coming through our farm system, and I knew they all could play. Kevin Mitchell, Kevin Elster, Lenny, Doc, you know, you go on, you got Sid and Ronnie, they came through from trades, but they were in our farm system, and I knew these guys can play. And that's the same thing that I tried to encourage that team about. You know, you guys got to come together. You guys got to pull together. You got to not be one-sided. And I think they struggles were early in the year is being one-sided. One-sided meaning they didn't have the identity of who they were. And I think when they made the turn, they started identifying themselves. They said, okay, now we got into the clubhouse. We had a meeting. We let everybody talk. We need to air the room out. We need to clear, you know, what animosity or whatever's going on in here. And we need to come together. Together like that made it very special for them. That's why you end up seeing them have a very special run, because they came together. Had they not came together, they wouldn't have never had that kind of run. But they did. They put it all together. They had to put everything and keep the noise. They had to keep the outside noise out. You got to, you know, when you play ball, you got to leave the outside noise out. And what I'm talking about there, guys, you got to leave the media out of the clubhouse. You got to leave everybody else out of the clubhouse. This is about our team. This is about our coaches. And this is about us. And this is how we got to roll. And this is how we got to fix this. And I give a lot of credit to, you know, Mindy, the manager. He did a great job with that team. I mean, it was his first year, and it was a hard thing to do. To keep the balance and not let guys get completely lost. Did they get lost a little bit? Yes, I think they got lost a little bit in that first half. Everybody started looking around and looking at who's not doing what, and instead of like, okay, let's pick each other up. And when they got rolling, it was all about who got it done. Let's just get it done. And TC will know that. That's what teams are all about. That's what takes teams to the next level. As when you guys can communicate and come together and play together like that, then it makes it special for them. And that's why they had a special season at that second half of the season, that run they had for the season, because I think they put their egos to the side and they said, guys, we got to be a team if we expect to win.
Yeah, it was a magical second half of the season for sure. One of the most memorable in Mets history for sure. My final question to you, and then we have a couple of fan questions, is about your life outside of baseball and your life today. You travel around the country every day with your wife, Tracy, to help others find their way. What led you to wanting to share your life, your faith, and your message to others who want to find their way in their lives today?
I just think life is a journey. Life is all about experiencing things. And we all going to go through some type of trials and tribulations. That doesn't mean you're a bad person. That doesn't mean life is over. And I think a lot of times that's what's happened in this nation. People have gotten complacent and you're pointing fingers at people. Why point fingers at people? This life is hard. It's hard to do. You know, it's hard to be on. You know, if it was easy, it would be so simple for all of us, but it's not. You know, it's a challenge, and I realize that, and I realize that the things that I've experienced in life and who I get to be today is I'm truly grateful for it. I'm truly grateful for the love that God has for me and that he's extended to me, that I'm able to go back and extend to somebody else. And I think we'd be better off if, as a nation of people, if we didn't point fingers at each other and we just try to help each other. There's a need. There's a need out there for those that are hurting, those that will never live a life of fortune. I think one thing that people have to stop listening to, you got to stop listening and looking at the government to help you and celebrities to help you. You know, there's real people out there with real, you know, agendas to help people. And I think people need to look towards that, you know, to get the help that is needed, because we all need help in some kind of way. You know, I wish I could say, you know, this was a perfect life. It's not. And, you know, I'm a prime example. It's not perfect, you know, from what I've experienced firsthand and been able to stand up and take responsibility, you know, because of people helping me. It was my wife that helped me. It was my mother that helped me. And it was that friends that helped me get on the other side and be the man that I am today. So I'm truly grateful for people helping me.
You've had a remarkable journey in your life story.
Thank you.
Everyone can go to, you're welcome. You can go to findingyourway.com if you want to learn more about Daryl and Tracy and their mission and what they're doing today. And it's just a great website. And Daryl, I watch you on Instagram. I hear you with your testimony, and it's very inspirational, whether you're a baseball fan or just somebody that just has a regular job and working. And so I really have to, it's very inspiring. That's all.
Thank you.
That's what I'd like to just let you know. I got a couple of questions from the fans, and this one comes from our Instagram account, from Green Machine 82. And he asked, Daryl, which players today, if any, do you view as the most similar to you?
Well, similar, that's kind of hard to say. You know? I mean, I view a guy like Aaron Judge, you know, a power hitter. I view a guy like Lindor, you know, just an all-around player that can, you know, run, hit for power, steal bases. He can run the bases, you know, play defense, you know, just a complete player. You know, the guy like that, you know, he does it all, you know, and that's the kind of way I played the game, you know, ran, hit, you know, hit for power, just a complete player. Those guys really stand out. You know, some of the other guys, you know, that stood out is with guts is like a guy like Harper, you know, from the Phillies, first baseman. You know, he got guts. You know, a guy like Mike Trout. If Trout could stay healthy, he is one of the most phenomenal players that ever played the game. But he just can't stay healthy for some reason. The injuries keep plugging away at him. And you would have probably seen a whole different level of numbers put up if the injuries didn't get him.
Yeah. Totally agree. Next question from the fans comes from our Facebook page. David from Las Vegas asked, Daryl, talk to us about your current relationship with Doc Gooden, and how did it feel to have both of your numbers retired in the same year?
I mean, I have a tremendous relationship with Doc Gooden. Behind the scenes, you know, our personal relationship is real. He knows I love him, and I know he loved me. I think when you always have to be like faced in the media about questions, you know, opinions about us two. It's been so unfair because we're not the same people. We're two different people. You know, we live different lives and everything. We come from different places. I'm from LA. He's from Florida. That's different. I mean, we grew up different. You know, Doc is very shy and quiet. You know, me, I'm not, you know, I like to talk at times, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, my opinions is my opinions, but I don't have opinions to hurt anybody. My opinions is to help people and try to love. People try to say, well, he thinks he's better than. No, I'm not thinking I'm better than. I have been in some of those places that Doc has been and going through, you know. It's like you need people there that love and care for you, not people just talking and saying that they're your friends, you know. And Doc knows that with me. He knows that I'm a true friend, and he realized that, and I realized that he is too. And to be able to have our numbers retired in the same year was just incredible. You know, it speaks a lot about new ownership, Steve and Alex, and what they think of us and what they think of what we accomplished there. Because when you look back on it, we actually was the beginning of the new era for the New York Mets when we came up from the days of the Seavers and all those guys. We became that new group of guys, and we helped that team and helped that franchise move forward to get into the winning circle.
Got it. Final question. This is from Larry from New Jersey. Darryl, with the Mets' new ownership, or Steve Cohen owning the team now for 4 years, and the organization now seeming to embrace more and more of their history. Give us your thoughts about what the Cohen family has done to bring back some of the old timers of the past. And are the Mets in excellent shape for the foreseeable future?
The Cohen family has brought back so much for the fans. And they will continue to do that because they love their fans and they do love the Mets. And I think it's a new season, new time for them. I think they are headed in a new direction of putting winning teams on the field every year to try to embrace their fans like they did this season. I think it was just the beginning of that for them. And I think they have the right direction. I think they have the right leader in David. Baseball guy, when you look at Milwaukee and look at what he did with Milwaukee all those years, that Milwaukee team this year, that's David Stern's team. He put that together. He just left there. So he's had them running in the right direction for a long time, and they are not an expensive team, you know, far as salary-wise and everything, and to be in competition and compete. So right there tells me that he knows about baseball. He understands the game of baseball, and he understands that you don't have to, you know, throw a boatload of money to older guys here and there, and you can develop these younger guys, and you can blend them in with some of these veteran guys, and it works, and you win. And I think he's done a phenomenal job with that, and I just hope their fans can see that and realize that, you know, I think their goal is not to be a wild card every year and get that lucky and be a wild card and get yourself all the way to the National League Championship every year. I think their goal is to try to be a team that's better than the Braves, that's better than the Phillies. They don't have to look at a lot of the other teams and better than the Dodgers. You have to come back and learn how to beat those teams in the National League. You can't worry about the Yankees. You can't worry about the other teams. You got to worry about the National League. Who do we get better than in the National League? Our goal is to win the National League Championship Series, and that's what really springs you forward to get to the next level. And I think that's what they're working towards, you know, and it's a good sign to see that.
All right. I really appreciate your time today. I'm going to toss it back to TC.
Well, Darryl, you're the best. Thank you so much for your time today. And you know what? Not just the Mets family, but all of baseball is glad you're feeling better. You got through that heart issue you had, and you're back out there on the road and doing all your stuff. And it's great. We're very, very proud of you. I'm proud, so proud that you would take time today to be on my show. And I look forward to seeing you real soon. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Anytime, TC. You know that. You're the man, brother. You know we love you.
All right, Terry, Daryl Strawberry, gracious with his time, wonderful interview, and what a wonderful person he is as well.
You know, John, one of the things that this show has provided me, and I've known these guys, I mean, I've known Doc and I've known Daryl for a long time, but you know what? When you sit here and you can ask them questions and you hear their passion not only about the game, you know, listen to Daryl talk about that 86 Mets team and, you know, his relationship with all those guys, you know, that stuff's special, man. And then you hear about, you know, what he's doing to help other people have better lives. I mean, these guys aren't just great players. They're human beings who care about what's going on around the world and the game of baseball. And so I thought today's talk with Daryl was outstanding.
Absolutely. Can tell you really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it just being a part and seeing you guys talk to each other. But Terry, I want to ask you something. I mean, this season for you has been so different. And because you're usually the guy that's getting peppered with questions by the media, you know, post-game, pre-game. And this year, and for this season, it turned the tables a little bit. You know, you had wonderful conversations with everybody here, from David Wright in our first episode to Daniel Murphy coming on to Noah Syndergaard to so many, and Daryl and Doc. And how was it for you this season actually playing the part or doing, you know, I know you do work with SNY as well, but talking to these players and front office people and coaches that you've managed and worked with? How was that like for you this season?
Well, I'll tell you, John, you know, I just spent that week with the fantasy campers where you're every day you're talking about stuff. And at the end of the week, the one guy said, you know, we can't believe that you would come out here and just talk to us and, you know, share your stories. And I said, you know, this game is about the fans. It will always be about the fans. And so to be able to give you guys a little bit of the inside, what goes on, how these guys really are as people, they're not just great players. They're not just talented players. You know, they're great people, and they have something to offer on the outside. They can help people. And so that's what I've gotten from this, to be able to talk to these guys and hear their stories. And, you know, I the accountability these guys have had, all the guys we've talked to, including Tom Hallion. I mean, you know, I never got to talk to Tom after the infamous argument on the field. That's the first time I have talked to Tom Hallion was on this show, and to hear his side of things, I loved it. For me,
yeah.
I mean, I've always kind of wondered myself for a number of years, like, you know, what happened? And so to be able to do that, to be able to bring a little different look to a baseball to the fans was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's certainly been a tremendous amount of fun, and it's been so great to be able to do this. Terry, now it's time for the Tunnel to Towers Amazing Hero of the Week, and a part of its effort in provide housing for veterans facing hardships, Tunnel to Towers is building a veterans village in Memphis. Let's take a look at that groundbreaking right now.
Veteran homelessness in this area is an issue, as Shelby County does have the largest veteran population as a whole in the state of Tennessee. And I'm thrilled that Tunnel to Towers is going to help with benefits, advocacy, mental health, and other needs for our veterans, homeless veterans.
It's a start. It's a home. It's a beginning. With wraparound services that are provided for free to veterans, they can uplift themselves and live a more independent life, and they deserve so much more. These are individuals who are protecting us, you know, protecting our livelihood, protecting our country, and so they deserve more. And as much as we can give, we need to give even more.
I would encourage people to donate to T2T because of the impact that they're making on the lives of so many. I think it's incredible. I mean, to be able to know that you served your country and made sacrifices, to know that someone is looking out for you. So to see T2T making that impact on the lives of these individuals is a great thing. And I just continue to pray for greater things to come for it.
It is great for this community because helping our veterans is one thing everyone can get behind, whether you're urban, suburban, your race, your political affiliation. We all want to help our veterans and see that they have served us, so we want to see them served.
All right, we'll have another T2T Amazing Hero segment on next week's show, and that's going to wrap it up, Terry, for another edition, show number 31 of the Terry Collins Show. And Terry, we just want to thank you again. What a great show with Daryl Strawberry. If anybody out there wants to subscribe to our YouTube channel, go to youtube.com, and that is with the Terry Collins Show. And all these shows that we've done this season are there in the archives. So if you haven't seen all of them, you can check it out on YouTube. You can follow Terry on X and Instagram at @TerryCollins_10. So for Terry Collins, this is John Arezzi. Have a great week, everyone.